Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Perhaps you saw the story in the New York Times over the weekend, the headline, The New Math on Campus. It's not about arithmetic, however. It's about romance, it's about dating, and it's about the new gender imbalance on American college and university campuses. The picture is very interesting. It shows several young women around one young man. And it's just indicative of what's going on in a lot of college campuses where the sex ratio or the gender ratio has switched to about 60-40. That's 60% females, 40% males. In the aftermath of the feminist revolution and all kinds of social change, we're looking now at a reality that women outnumber men on almost every campus. There are some rare exceptions, but on most campuses, women outnumber men, sometimes on some of these campuses, by a very vast differential. Now, this is leading to all kinds of things. I have before me right now a folder filled with articles having to do with headlines like not only the new math on campus, but a good man is harder to find. You've got also headlines saying things like college is linked to marriage, but for women, the gender gap is very evident. What we're looking at here is a major change in the way that, in terms of recent history, young men and young women are likely to find each other and get married. Now, this raises a host of questions for all persons, but let me just say, especially for Christians, it raises the question, how do we think about ministry and how do we think about encouraging marriage in a generation where you have all these young women on campus, but a decreasing number of young men? Now, one fascinating point that was made in this article is that the college campus is becoming a good deal like a nursing home in that what you have is an imbalance of women to men to such an extent that that there are so few men, women are just gathered around every single man. And it's becoming that way more and more on the college campus as well. We'll turn to that in just a moment. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Interesting story, by the way, that I got from another newspaper, this one from the Los Angeles Times. And it's talking about the fact that some of the major department stores, big box discount stores, and drug stores there in the L.A. area are now running power aisles just for men. This is kind of funny. Think about gender issues in America. This is just for men. And these particular aisles have just male items for grooming, that is, for everything from hair and shaving and all the rest, because as it turns out, men really do not like to shop in places where women stuff is mixed in with their stuff, and they have trouble finding their stuff. They don't want to go through all that stuff. It is interesting, as a form of marketing, it turns out that when there is a man's aisle, men actually go in and do their shopping, but otherwise they stay away. That tells you something about the state of gender relations. And listen, the marketers often find these realities before anyone else. Speaking of sex on television, it looks like, and every year we seem to be saying this over and over again, it looks like new boundaries are being trespassed. Gary Strauss in USA Today, talking about this particular season and what is coming, points out, well, actually, a lot of the stuff he points out, I could not even mention aloud on this program. But what's happening, and the reason why I want to bring it to your attention, is that you've got this explicit sexuality that is migrating from the big screen to cable and then from cable directly into primetime network programming. And parents for a long time have been oblivious to the fact, and that's a story unto itself, about how these explicit sexual images are coming more and more into the lives of their children, and they're coming in through the television. One particular executive that deals in the television world with trying to get viewers said this: you need to get eyeballs. You need to be loud. That's Spike programming chief Kevin Kay. Spike, by the way, is a network that is basically directed towards young men. Very explicit sexuality, very crude, very rude. And I have never seen a statement like this that is more just absolutely in your face, upfront, about the reason why you need to get eyeballs. In other words, this network is saying, we'll do whatever it takes to get male eyeballs on this screen. It's the eyeballs on the screen that sell the advertisements, and we'll do anything possible. Folks, the issue here is, where are the eyeballs of your sons? Are they being drawn to this screen? If you were to hear some of what is being broadcast on programs such as Blue Mountain State, That is a just-launched college sports comedy described even by USA Today as raunchy. Well, you'll understand that what we have here is a coarsening of society, a degrading of sexuality, and an absolute upfront admission that sex sells. That's the big deal here. They're saying right up front, sex sells. You want to reach young males, you use sex. You get the eyeballs on the screen by putting the storyline and the visuals on the screen, the crude jokes that keep them watching. And folks on the cable television networks, it's just getting even worse than that. Now, I didn't raise this simply to bemoan the moral state of popular entertainment, but rather to say to parents, especially who are listening, this is a big deal. It really is. Because just like with explicit pornography that comes by magazines or the internet or anything else, once these images are in the mind, they are in the mind forever. The male mind is like a data bank. And once these images are written upon the data bank, they are there forever. And so parents, if you, for instance, are among the 71%, let's put it this way, if your children are among the 71% of children and adolescents who have a television in their own bedroom, and they have access to this kind of stuff. And by the way, one of the reasons I brought this up is it's not just the cable network stations, the satellite stations. It is indeed broadcast television where this stuff is coming in. Listen to this. This, again, is Gary Strauss with USA Today writing, taste standards and broadcast guidelines aside, sexual content and where to push the boundaries is largely established by programmers seeking traction among fickle viewers. J.D. Roth, producer of the NBC reality hit The Biggest Loser, said when advertising dollars are down, you have to cut through, you have to get attention. So there again, you see the motive. When advertising dollars are less, companies are spending less on advertisement, spending less in media investment, then they're going to go where the action is the hottest, and the action is the hottest in terms of viewership, where it is in the context of this kind of explicit sexuality. Folks, you see things every once in a while that catch your eye. I wonder why I'd never seen this before. I was looking at a copy of The Nation. The Nation poses as the most left-wing of the major magazines in America. It is well to the left on the American political spectrum. And I'd never looked at the classified ads in it before, but I happened to just in recent days. And the classified ads include personals. And the personals are called liberal liaisons, and they are absolutely hilarious. You've got people writing in because they want a relationship with someone who shares their liberal worldview. This one man writing in saying he's looking for a woman who's into sailing, silent sports, yoga, organic farming, cats, politics, would like someone who's a liberal, into social farm and food activism, sustainable lifestyles, who is passionate, romantic, and intellectual. Well, maybe like calls to like, but when you start looking at this, you realize there's an entire world out there of people who are looking for others to share their organic and progressive liberal lifestyle together. One of the symptoms of Christianity in North America is that, especially in certain urban areas, churches are being shuttered and closed. And in some cities, it's because of demographic shifts, but the main reason is because of the secularization of the culture and the liberalization of so many churches. You drive down any of the major boulevards in America's major metropolitan areas, and you're going to see church after church after church that a decade ago, certainly a few decades ago, was filled and now empty. USA Today has another very fascinating cover article on the fact that at least one parish in a growing area, Norcross, Georgia, is interested in moving a major church facility from up north, in this case, from Buffalo, New York, St. Gerard's Parish. It's a large basilica. They want to move it in its entirety, piece by piece, like a Lego set, from Buffalo to Norcross, Georgia. Folks, I'm less interested in the architecture and engineering of all of that than what it says about religion in America. We have seen Christianity in America stumble in the inner cities, try to move out to the suburbs, and then try to go back into the cities again, which have largely become foreign territory to a lot of evangelical churches. And now we even have some of those downtown churches being, at least by proposal, dismantled and moved out to suburbs elsewhere, which is just a sign to us again that church life in America is always changing. But not only is it changing, it tells us a great deal about the theological issues that underlie all of this. Folks, you've been listening to, of course, the controversy over the Tim Tebow ad with his mom, Pam, during the Super Bowl. As a board member of Focus on the Family, I decided not to speak of it until it was over. But folks, did you notice how many people were ready to go on the line to complain about her choice for life. If anything, the argument that was smoked out in that controversy is that there are some persons on the pro-abortion side who are so pro-abortion, they will not even, when they say they are for choice, suggest that a decision for a baby to live is morally significant to a decision to kill the baby. Folks, I hope you caught that. In this moment in America, we got a glimpse of where at least some of our neighbors are on an issue as important as human life. They simply would not admit that keeping the baby was in any way morally superior to aborting it. It's going to take a while for America to let that sink in, I think. When we come back, we're going to talk about gender imbalance on the campus and what it says about America and to the church on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, the future comes fast, and if you want to see the future fully in view, go to America's college and university campuses. And there on those campuses, you're going to see the folks who are going to be the business people, the faculty, the school teachers, the real estate agents, the computer programmers, the vets, the doctors, the lawyers of the future. That's where they're going to be. And when you go to America's college campuses, if you just compare the way they were 50 years ago to now, you're going to notice that a revolution has taken place. And the biggest revolution is on the question of gender. The New Math on Campus is the headline in the style section of yesterday's edition of the New York Times. The subtitle is, When Women Outnumber Men at College, Dating Culture is Skewed. Now, that's to say the least. By the way, University of North Carolina, 60% female, 40% male. This article goes by university, indicating that it's almost the same thing. University of Georgia, 57% female and only 43% male. And some smaller colleges, it's even worse than that. And you can just go institution by institution and discover that women are now outnumbering men almost coast to coast at about a 60-40 ratio in baccalaureate programs. And the reasons for that are many. Boys are doing not so well at school compared to girls. Boys tend to drop out rather than to continue and go on. Boys seem to feel unwelcome on a good many college campuses, feel that college is not for them, and they are leaving. Now, there's another dynamic to add to this. We're going to be looking at that New York Times article, but it is fascinating that this article comes out just a few days after similar reports came out concerning the fact that women want to marry up. And this is one of the interesting quandaries brought about by the feminist revolution. If women want to marry up, they're going to have a harder time if they are predominating on the college campus and the men are in a minority. And when I say marry up, it means that women indicate that they want to marry a man who has at least as much education as they do and hopefully more, at least as much earning power as they have and hopefully more, at least as much intellectual aptitude and interest as they have and if not more. And that is just going to be impossible when women are outnumbering men, not only, of course, among baccalaureate students, but among those who are graduating with BA and BS degrees and going on to advanced study and career advancement as well. Now, the article in the New York Times is really interesting. The picture on the front will certainly catch your attention. It has at least six women on the picture with one man. And the stuff in here is gender explicit and sometimes even a bit sexually explicit, but it gives us a reality, at least a view into a reality we need to know about. And let me just tell you enough that you'll understand what this is about. The American college scene has been really characterized by kind of a hooking up culture now for some time. Authors such as Tom Wolfe have made this very, very clear, both writing fiction and nonfiction, getting at what's going on in this hooking up culture. That now means that you have all kinds of sexual encounter, sexual negotiation going on, especially on these big university campuses. That's the game that's being played. But again, everything's now being shaken up when there are more women than men. And the thing, I really hadn't thought about this, but the thing that from a secular perspective seems to be catching so much attention is the power this gives to the men who are there. If you are a young man on a college campus in one of these places, you're so outnumbered by girls, they are even more driven by the desire for romance, and, well, it's a buyer's market for a young man. And when you consider what's going on in their minds and in their plans, well, this article is very explicit. It makes clear Let's put it this way. Here's one woman being cited, Kathleen Bogle, sociologist at LaSalle University in Philadelphia. She's the author of the book Hooking Up, Sex, Dating, and Relationships on Campus, published in 2008. She said this, women do not want to get left out in the cold, so they are competing for men on men's terms. This results in more casual hookup encounters that do not end up leading to more serious romantic relationships. Since college women say they generally want something more than just a casual hookup, women end up losing out. Keith Campbell, psychology professor at the University of Georgia, by the way, 57% female, said, when men have the social power, they create a man's ideal of relationships. Translation, more partners, more sex. Commitment, a good first step would be his returning a woman's Facebook message, end quote. So in other words, what we're looking at here, even from just a purely secular perspective, is women who are gaining academic control and men who are gaining relationship control. In a situation that is hardly healthy for either gender. Now, when you start talking about something like this, people immediately jump to all kinds of policy conclusions. I don't know what kind of policy would even help here. I think the bigger issue is whether or not we as parents and all those concerned with college and university students understand the reality that's going on out there. I think this means something very different in terms of the challenge for a college ministry. I think this means a real challenge for the local church. One of the biggest issues, and I come back to this, and people are shocked to hear me say this, but I'm going to say it again, so just get ready. One of the main responsibilities of the people of God, that is the local church, a local congregation, is to get its members well married. And most churches don't even think about that. One of the main responsibilities of parents, even more urgently, is to get their children well married. From a secular perspective, that just makes sense in terms of sociology and family happiness and flourishing and reproduction and all the rest. From a Christian perspective, the stakes are so much higher because it has to do with being well married to someone who is spiritually compatible as well as everything else. A believer marrying a believer and the two of them bringing out the best in each other and faithfulness in each other before God through Christ. This is a huge issue. And I think it's right for our conversation today. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, time and time again, we come back to the marriage issue on this program. We've talked about at least the encouragement of younger marriage, the delay of marriage, this extension of adolescence being a major issue. And now we're talking about a gender revolution that is going to have massive consequences in the society around us. If you have all of these women who want to get married, and the pool of men they consider acceptable being increasingly small and smaller, there's a train wreck coming. And then there's another article here saying that some advice to women now is you just marry a man because a man is a man and you just settle for the best you can get. And that's a serious proposal being made by some women to other women. You just settle for whatever you can get. And I think as a pastor, as a parent, as a theologian, I'll tell you, that's a frightening proposal. In the Wall Street Journal, Richard Whitmire writing says that there are some people who are saying, some women who are saying, I can find a lot of Mr. Almost, but I can't find Mr. Right. So you settle for almost rather than Mr. Right. Folks, I want to know what you're seeing, perhaps on the college campuses around you, how you're handling this in the local church, how parents are thinking about this for their children. And much like we talked about on Friday about what parents should hope for their very young children as they are growing up and gaining their education, going out into the world, I wonder how many parents are really thinking through what we are hoping for the spouse of our children, how we are praying for the future spouse or spouses for our children, that is, one spouse for each child, as we think about how getting them raised and launching them in life is not only about education, it's also about getting them well-prepared for life, well-prepared for holiness and faithfulness, and well-prepared for marriage. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Folks, I hear on this program and by every other means of communication from young women all over the place, especially college age, asking the question, where are the serious, faithful, ready to be married, responsible, believing young men? It's a big question. So let me ask you, where are you? The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is a big story. It's a big development. When you start looking at how human beings start to renegotiate the way they go through life, it's big. It's big for life, big for ministry, for the social context, for the future of the country, culture, politics, you name it. But this gender imbalance on America's college and university campuses has reached the point that you now have triggered what the Wall Street Journal is calling an operational sex ratio crisis. That operational sex ratio, meaning wherever women and men are together, the question is, what's the ratio? If they are going to pair up in marriage, how's it going to happen? Well, obviously, it's not going to happen, at least not for many people, if the ratio is 60% women and 40% men, and on some campuses, even worse. I think parents ought to be taking a very clear note of this, because our expectation has often been you send your daughter off to college, you know, there's a good chance she's going to there find her spouse. And the same thing with young men, of course. Well, it turns out it's a lot more likely right now for young men than for young women. The odds are in their favor. The numbers favor the young men. And in a fallen Genesis 3 marked society where you know that the sex drive is one of the major engines for misbehavior, you've got men who on these secular campuses are able to say, look, if you want to date, you're going to have to do this. And this article in the New York Times from Sunday is just very clear, indeed explicit. These young men now have a power to say, if you won't give me what I'm looking for, there'll be plenty of women who will. One of the odder things in this article, by the way, is how these young women are getting dressed up. That is makeup, dress clothes, and all the rest to go out with each other. Not romantically, but just socially, because there aren't enough men to ask them out. One interesting comment in this article said, look, if you go to the average college campus, most women would write off 50% of the men as unacceptable at the beginning, you know, just in terms of their interest. 50% is a generous group to start with. But a lot of them already have girlfriends. So you're left with a percentage of a percentage of a percentage. And that's big. How should churches, college ministries, parents, college students think through this? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. How are we as Christians, as churches and as parents, helping our children as young adults to get healthfully married? That's a big question. Let's go to Chad, listening on WFIA from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Chad.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. As a Christian parent, I don't think we are helping our children looking at it from a broad perspective. I think as parents, I think our Christian worldview and discipleship of our children is not being done. I think the word Christian to most Christians is cliche anymore, and I think that we're doing a poor job of teaching our children what they believe, why they believe it, and how it applies.
Yeah, I think across the board, we're just not doing too good a job, Chad. I think that's a fair diagnosis of the evangelical movement. And it's verified when you start looking at how little most of these kids know of the Bible or the Christian faith. You know, Chad, I think failure is beyond that, too. I think that many Christian parents think that it's the job of our children to find their spouse. It's the job of our daughter or our son to get rightly, healthfully, and appropriately married. I'll tell you, I think that presumption is wrong. And I do think that we have a good deal of responsibility as parents to be involved in this process. And I'm just looking at this number and just thinking to myself, here is 60-40. Folks, that's a remarkable change. By the way, it's a change in the last 20 years. Now, I went to a college that had just about that kind of ratio, but it was compared as being kind of out of step with the state universities in that state, and now that's very different. You look at for instance, the neighboring state of Georgia, the University of Georgia, 57% female undergraduates, only 43% male. And then you move into special programs, it's even more. A predominance of women in many law schools and medical schools. So you're not just talking about a ratio at the baccalaureate level that's weighted towards females. It's also at the graduate level. And again, when you look at all these studies where women overwhelmingly say they're unwilling to marry someone with less education, less earning potential, less social standing, then you can see where this is going. And most of this is just a simple, secular, straightforward understanding and grappling with this issue. But we as Christians are called to something far higher than that. You know, I think we need to set as just a basic principle of our understanding here that our marriage is not just a matter of being successfully related in a sociological institution. Our marriage, from a Christian perspective, is getting ready to glorify God in every way that He gives us in the institution of marriage, with marriage itself being a picture of His redemptive work of love for His church. And that means that for us, marriage is never just marriage. I wonder what you think about this. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It's not, by the way, just marriage is going on here. The Wall Street Journal article, "The Right Man is Getting Harder to Find" by Richard Whitmire, indicates that not only are a lot of highly educated women not finding spouses, they're also deciding to go ahead and have children. The trend towards single motherhood is being fueled in part by women who've decided they're just never going to find a man that's up to their standards, up to their education, up to their aptitude, up to their cultural taste. And so they're simply going to go ahead and have a baby without a father. And obviously without a husband. Really, really interesting. He writes, "Today, more and more well-educated women have to ask themselves, am I willing to marry down?" Wow. Then this article in the New York Times. It's fascinating that these things come in such a confluence. The new math on campus, dating culture skewed by this proportionality of women at 60%, men at 40%. I'm going to go back to what I said in the earlier segment, and that is, I think churches are failing in the responsibility to help our church members get well married. And I think parents are failing in this responsibility. We can't just assume that the dating culture and putting young people on a college campus is going to solve the problem. Now, obviously, it's not. The number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Beth, listening on WFIA. What are you thinking, Beth?
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I'm looking at this from both perspective of a parent who's got three daughters, one married to a Christian, one that's engaged to a great Christian guy, and another one who's in a serious relationship. And I think maybe what we need to come to terms with is this idea that as Christian parents, we've kind of thrown our lot into what the world values. And we stress to our kids it's really important to marry the right person with the right degree and the right job and the right prospects. And, you know, while that's kind of important, I think that we're losing sight of the fact that first and foremost we need to stress to our children and pray from the time they're babies that they're going to find the person that the Lord would like to be with, the person who has a Christian faith and a Christian perspective and is going to lead them in a Christian marriage. And all the rest of it will fall into place. I think that we've made the mistake, though, of using the world's criteria to determine who would be worthy of our children's mates in marriages today.
You know, Beth, I think you are so right. You know, this question of compatibility is a worldview-loaded question. What worldview determines what we believe is essential to compatibility? And, you know, Beth, let me just tell you, and I'll share this with the listeners. I do this on college campuses all the time, and I do this when young men especially come up to me and say, how do I know that I'm supposed to marry this girl? Well, I always point out that the question is more, well, it's simplified. It is not as big as I think it is. Number one, if you're a young man, you're to marry a woman. That's just very clear. That's essential to the biblical worldview, and that means you're taking half of humanity off the table right now. Then, according to the scripture, a Christian young man is to marry a Christian young woman. Okay? So being equally yoked, that is together under the yoke of Christ, is very important. So that reduces the number down by a vast percentage. So out of the total population of Christian women that this young man might marry, I always point out that he's not going to marry someone he doesn't know. He's not going to marry someone he never meets. So if you believe in the sovereignty of God, you're going to believe that somehow in your circle of acquaintances, you're likely to come across that woman that you are supposed to marry. And then the Bible gives us some very clear guidelines as to what we should look for, addressed to both women and men. We should look for a spouse that will make us more faithful, not less. We should look for a spouse who will bring out the qualities of the gifts of the Spirit, you know, the signs and and graces of the Christian life. We should find one who shares similar passions, especially those spiritual passions, someone equally committed to the integrity and dignity of marriage, equally excited about, committed to receiving children as gifts from the Lord and raising them in the admonition and nurture of the Lord. We should be looking for someone who meets the biblical criteria for manhood found in the Scripture, or, on the other hand, for a young man looking for a woman, he should be looking for the one that meets the biblical criteria for godly womanhood in the Scripture. And, you know, Beth, I think you're exactly right. Even Christian parents, I think, sometimes misparent, and we mislead our children to grave injury when we tell them you need to give primary attention to money and earning power. And you're right, Gail, when you said those are not insignificant. Of course they're not insignificant, because one of the things that a young woman should look for in a man is one who can provide. One who is industrious, one who has the right kind of godly ambitions, and one who is going to fulfill that male responsibility to lead and to earn and to provide. Yes, that is not extraneous, but not in the terms of the consumer culture we have now. And, of course, it's not just earning power. In terms of physical attractiveness, in terms of any number of other things, we have allowed the world to tell us you should be looking for X and Y and Z while skipping over A and B and C, which for the Christian is far more important. Theological, spiritual compatibility is far more important than any other kind of compatibility. And as a matter of fact, we have to believe in the Christian worldview that if there is truly a spiritual compatibility, a compatibility within the house of the Christian faith, then we have to believe that those other compatibilities will follow. And you're never going to meet the one you're supposed to marry if you walk around with a checklist of things that are impossible for any person to meet. And I do find it very, very ominous when I read this article in the Wall Street Journal, that is, that the right man is getting hard to find, with women saying Mr. Perfect evidently isn't out there, I'll settle for Mr. Almost. Well, nobody's perfect. In the Christian worldview, we're the ones who know you're never going to find perfection in a mate. You're only going to find perfection in Christ. And, of course, from a secular perspective, I guess you've got to think you've got to find perfection in a mate, because that's all you think you're going to have forever. And that's just not going to work. Every single human being is frail and is fallible and faulty. And no human being is going to live up absolutely always to any other person's expectation. And yet, in the biblical worldview, marriage is a good thing, a holy estate, much to be admired and always to be respected. And we're looking now at a grave and great demographic revolution in this society, which is not only the expense of women, not only the expense that this article indicates of these young women who have bleak prospects of meeting the man they're looking for on the college campus as a mate, as a spouse. It damages the entire society. And I really appreciate the fact that the Wall Street Journal shows at least a part of the ricochet effect of this. It's not just women who aren't getting married. It's women who are becoming mothers while they are not married, because they've given up finding a spouse, but they haven't given up having a baby. And so, folks, when you start to look at this, you realize this is a circle within a circle within a circle. And the only way to untangle it all is to get back to the New Testament and ask the question of the Scriptures, what is marriage? What is my Christian responsibility? What should parents be doing? What should we be looking for in a potential spouse for our children? What should our children be looking out for in terms of their own future spouse? You know, folks, this gender imbalance on the campus is a symptom of a reality. It's not the cause. It is a symptom. We have done this to ourselves. And now we're going to have to figure out how to be faithful, even in the midst of this particular challenge. Right back with final thoughts. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, one of the things that this reminds us of is that we as Christians aren't just a part of a secular world that throws its demography at us. We're supposed to be raising children in the midst of a family, the Christian family existing as an island in the midst of a chaotic world where things are rightly ordered. And that means we just can't settle for the demography, the statistics being thrown at us as all we need to know. This just underlines our responsibilities. Go to Emory, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Emory.
Yes, just the conversation and the discussion obviously confirms the reason why fathers need to stay active in their marriages and in their families, to be able to raise up sons to encourage them to go to college and be Christian men in order to be the example that young ladies are looking for as husbands.
Yeah, Emery, very good point. You know, this is the other side. You know, it's kind of like supply and demand. The supply side of young men is where Christians need to give a lot of attention here. It's not that the young men out there, it is that they are not aspiring to go to college. They're not doing well academically. They're aiming low and sometimes achieving lower. And Emery, you're exactly right. I'm sure you can trace a good deal of that to the absence of a father in the home. And we just need to remind fathers of the responsibility to make certain that their sons aim high, not low. And not for earthly glory and just for income and long-term earning potential, but for maximum deployment for the glory of God. I mean, the reality is that if we settle for a society in which we have highly educated women and barely educated men, then let me tell you, we're going to have a matriarchy, whether you want to call it that or not. And that is going to be a situation in which young men are going to be stifled and malformed and, frankly, unfaithful. And from a Christian perspective, that last part is more important than anything that comes before. Folks will be tracking this with you. It is a fascinating issue. I appreciate all the callers today. I'll tell you, I guess I just need to register my own shock that more Christian parents are not concerned about this, are not thinking about this. And I want to go back to the thing I said earlier. We just have assumed pretty much what our parents assumed. And at least in my generation, it was a pretty safe assumption. You know, my child is probably going to eventually meet the person that he or she is supposed to marry, and they're going to live happily ever after. You go up to the college campus, the assumption is that, you know, they arrive 18 and single and leave 22 and either married or about to be. Well, folks, that process, that system was broken a long time ago. Now we're looking at an extended adolescence into the late 20s or the early 30s, and we're looking here at a gender imbalance that just makes all of this even more difficult. We're going to have to face some hard questions as a society and also as a church. We try to figure out, how did we get here? What does it mean? And what in the world do we do now? We'll be tracking this with you on the Albert Mohler Program. I'll meet you tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. See you then.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.